thought she was talking to a different Amy, an Amy who'd had a bit of a rough time, but I couldn't really make sense of it. She started saying something about dating older men and getting hurt by them. I mean, it felt inappropriate, but maybe she doesn't have anyone else to talk to about this stuff. I've definitely noticed people open up to me more and more now. A woman the other day, I think she said she was a nurse, was talking about getting divorced because her husband had been sleeping with their neighbour. And then another one, who sounded pretty old, was talking about her boyfriend from when she was a teenager, how she still missed him and wondered what he was up to. The woman who sings to me while she's washing my hair is here. She's telling me about someone who comes in and sits, whatever that means, about how he's broken his leg and his wife is having a baby. And I'm like, okay, so? I don't mean to be rude, but I don't know this man, so I find it hard to care about his leg or his baby. It feels like forever since I've spoken to Jenny or Becky or got any gossip from school. Screw broken legs and babies. What about the school disco and who's snogging who? Has Jenny worn down Steve yet, or is she still making desperate eyes at him across the Bunsen burners? What about Becky? Is she still having those dreams about Mr. Parker? Ha ha! She never should have told us about that. What did she expect us to do? Not take the piss about it relentlessly? Anyway, Alex was going on, and it started to freak me out a little bit. It was almost like I was being accused of something. I don't know, I didn't like it, and I tried to tell her. I don't know what happened or if I offended her, but she just suddenly stopped talking. I still hope she comes back.
Chapter 60. Alex. 15th of October, 2010. Matt's impending paternity leave brought another deadline into sharp focus. Jacob's wife could have his baby at any time, and, as soon as she did, he would be a dead end. No matter what he might say in the run-up, he wouldn't have the time or the inclination to help from the moment the first contraction kicked in. Alex knew she was juggling with flaming tar, but instead of staying home with her tea time jug and her medicinal measure, she drove to the office where Jacob had said he worked. She sat in the car park listening to the car radio and willing him to get a move on. It was some kind of afternoon drive time show where people phoned in with their requests. It poked a little hole in her ego to hear Waterfalls by TLC being placed in the golden oldies category. Eventually, the smoky brown double doors were shoved open, and Jacob, flanked by a younger man with dark hair and drop-waisted jeans, potted out. They walked slowly to a black Audi A3, Jacob reaching for the passenger door. Shit, of course he'd get a lift home. Alex popped her door open, keys still in the ignition. As she leaned out, she waved and called his name. Jacob and his colleague both span around, and Jacob gave her a look that couldn't possibly have meant anything other than what the fuck. His friend leaned on his car door, watching curiously, as Jacob made his slow progress across to Alex.
"What are you doing here?"
he asked, aghast. "I wanted to hear how it went with Jenny. I thought I could give you a lift home while you told me."
"You should have called me. I could have met you around the corner. I'm sorry, I didn't think. I'll have to explain to Mark who you are now. Just say I'm a friend." "Like that doesn't sound dodgy."
"Say I'm your cousin then. There's nothing dodgy about a cousin."
"Hmm."
"Did he buy it?" Alex asked, as Jacob clambered awkwardly into the passenger seat.
"I think he had to."
She crawled out of the car park and into the rush hour traffic. Alex wanted to cut straight to the point and ask what Jenny had said, but slowed herself down to ask about his first day back.
"It was okay, very busy.
So how did it go with Jenny?" Jacob paused and flexed his hands.
"Well, Amy was cheating on me, Alex, so you were right there."
Alex braked with more force than she intended and looked at Jacob, raising her eyebrows.
"Apparently, Amy got drunk a few weeks before she was attacked, and she told Jenny that she'd fallen for someone else."
The sides of Jacob's mouth twitched downwards.
Said Alex. What does that mean? I thought you'd be pleased that you were right.
I'm not pleased about any of it, and I'm sorry that you thought I would be. I don't quite know what to say.
Are you okay?
I guess. I mean, it's not like Jenny told me my wife was cheating or anything.
Jacob trailed off.
Did she actually say Amy had done anything with this person?
Alex was trying to stay patient.
No, she said that Amy liked someone else and he liked her. And she said that Amy was confused about what to do. Jenny didn't know for sure that anything had happened, but she didn't know it hadn't either. She just hadn't asked.
When did Amy tell her this?
A few weeks before she went missing.
God, I wish Jenny would let me interview her, thought Alex.
Her memories could clearly unpick some of the knots in the story, and it was increasingly obvious just how clueless and dopey Jacob had been back then.
Did Jenny have any idea who this other person was?
Jacob took a deep breath.
That's what's driving me mad. She said it was someone close to me. It must have been one of my school friends, but surely they'd have come forward.
Not if they thought they'd get in trouble. Did you ever have any suspicions about Amy and your mates?
No, never. She didn't seem to like any of them.
Jacob swiveled to face her.
Jenny said Amy had been in some sort of competition to lose her virginity, and you knew about it.
Did she?
Alex kept her eyes on the road, but could feel Jacob looking at her.
Yes, she did.
Okay, Becky told me about it, but I didn't want to mention it unless I really had to. I knew how much it would upset you. And to be completely honest, I put even less stock in it while I thought there was any chance Paul could be the culprit.
I just can't believe she'd be so flippant. I knew she was keen to, you know, but not like that. I thought she wanted to take that step with me, not just with anyone that would have her. Do you think she did something stupid because of it?
Hand on heart, I don't think this silly competition meant anything. I think most teenagers are in the same race, openly or not. I don't think Amy would have done anything rash just to beat her friends at something they were all going to exaggerate anyway.
I hope not. But she did sleep with someone. That's not pie in the sky, however much I hate to consider it. You told me that was a cold medical fact.
Yeah, it is. And we don't have enough facts for my liking. I really think Jenny is the key to this. She's the only one that we know Amy confided in. Do you think she might talk to me if you were there?
I don't know. Maybe. I can ask.
There's one other thing that confuses me. Do you have any idea why your brother Tom might have gone to see Amy a few years ago?
No, Jacob said wearily. I still have no idea. I mean, he's a caring guy, and I can imagine him wanting to see if she was okay. Maybe. But even that's a bit...
He trailed off.
Look, he really didn't know her that well. It just happened around him.
But it must have affected him, Alex said, gently. Your parents would have been distracted. You were interviewed by police. He even had to move school. All that stuff must have taken its toll.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be the first kid to move school or have disruptions in his life. I can't see it bothering him after all this time.
Did he like his new school?
No, but anyone would have hated it. St. Cuthbert's was a super religious private school, small and very strict. And it was all boys, too, very different to the grammar.
So basically, the only effect all this had on Tom was a bad one. He had to leave a school he liked to go to a gloomy boys' school.
Alex,
but he didn't complain? He didn't rage at you about this? Your girlfriend gets attacked, but he's the one that has to move schools. And he didn't moan?
He's always been a good guy, Alex. He's just not a complainer.
Or he felt responsible. He felt like he deserved to be punished.
She gripped the steering wheel and stared dead ahead, afraid to see the anger creeping up Jacob's neck, afraid that she'd stop and apologize.
You're way off, Alex. You're crossing a line.
And then, on top of all this easygoing, understanding acceptance of something shitty happening to him, he then, as an adult, goes to see Amy, the girl that caused all of this upheaval. You don't see how that's suspicious?
She could feel him staring at her. glowing hot and red in the passenger seat. But she stared resolutely at the black road.
Hold it right there, Alex. I can see what you're doing, and I don't like it. This is my family we're talking about, not some dodgy bloke like Paul Wheeler.
Alex chewed her lip, waiting for him to finish. Jacob, she said tersely, right now there are still some strange coincidences involving your brother. That doesn't mean he did anything wrong, but you must be able to see why I have to ask.
You're heading in the wrong direction.
Jacob paused and took a deep breath.
Come and speak to my mum. Come and ask her why she and Tom visited Amy, because I'm blowed if I know.
Really?
Believe me, this is the last thing I want to do, but this needs to be nipped in the bud and I don't have any answers. There will be a perfectly reasonable explanation, and once you've heard it, you can get on with working out what really happened.
Sue apologized for the non-existent mess. If I'd known we'd have company, and buzzed around the kitchen in a way that made Alex incredibly nervous.
Mum, don't worry, I'll make the tea,
Jacob said to the back of her head. I'm sorry to come here unannounced, Alex called after her, still blushing from the way Sue had eyed her up and down when they first walked in, like she knew Alex from somewhere, and not in a warm way. More like she'd seen her throwing up in the river or rowing in the street, both of which were possible once upon a time.
It's fine, Sue said curtly.
Perhaps thinking better of it, she turned around and smiled.
It's kind of you to drop him home.
Mum, I know you've not met Alex before, but she's a friend from Tunbridge Wells. You dropped me at her house recently.
I thought so.
Jacob blushed.
You do know, I hope, that Jacob is married?
Sue said to Alex as she poured thin amber tea into the teacups.
It's nothing like that, Alex started to say, looking at Jacob. Alex is just a friend, Mum.
Jacob looked at his feet.
Married men don't spend this much time with women who aren't their wives, Jacob. No wonder Fiona's so cross.
I shouldn't have come here, Alex said, picking her car keys back off the sideboard. I'm sorry.
No, wait,
Jacob said, holding his palm up and then folding it back to his side.
Mum, there's more I've not told you.
Sue crossed her arms over her chest and stared hard at Alex.
Alex is a journalist, Mum, and she's writing about Amy.
Amy?
Amy Stevenson, my old girlfriend from school.
I know who Amy is, Sue said.
Mrs. Arlington, I'm writing an article for the Times about the work they do on Bramble Ward at the Tunbridge Wells Royal Infirmary.
Oh?
I've been focusing on Amy's story.
I see.
And I've been talking to people like Jacob who knew Amy before she was attacked, and he thought you might be able to help.
Did he?
Sue held Jacob's eye until he looked back down at his feet.
Well, that was all a very long time ago, so I can't imagine I'd have anything useful to tell you.
You'll have a different perspective on it to her friends or to Jacob. You worked at Amy's school, for example?
I didn't have anything to do with the pupils. I really don't like the idea of being interviewed.
Would you mind trying, Mum? Alex's article might help me and her other friends come to terms with what happened.
Oh, for goodness sake, I'm sure you all came to terms with it years ago.
Jacob said nothing.
Yes, agreed Sue. Amy was a lovely girl. I didn't know her well, but she certainly seemed to have a spark about her.
Alex pushed the iPhone closer along the pine kitchen table. Sue fiddled with a coaster and flicked her eyes at Jacob, scrunched next to her in a matching pine chair. Alex wondered if these were the chairs he'd grown taller in which he'd learned to use a knife and fork.
All the school staff were affected, of course. People don't realize it, but teachers feel these things very keenly. They spend years with these youngsters, getting to know them.
And how about you? How did you feel?
Awful, of course. I felt dreadful for Jacob. I was powerless to help him,
which is a horrible feeling as a mother. And we were devastated for her family. Your child being hurt is every parent's worst nightmare. You'll do anything to prevent that.
So you and Amy got along? Asked Alex.
Amy was a lovely girl,
Sue repeated, stirring another cup of tea. Did she spend much time at your house?
A little. She and Jacob were going steady for a while, so she came round from time to time.
Did Amy get on with your son Tom as well?
Sue frowned. She wasn't friends with Tom.
But she must have met him.
Yes, of course, once or twice. But they weren't friends. Tom had plenty of his own friends.
Mrs. Arlington, when Amy went missing, the police interviewed Jacob.
Yes, they did. It was terrible.
Were you frightened?
I wasn't frightened because I knew he hadn't done anything wrong, but it was horrible to watch him go through that upset.
You weren't worried the police might think Jacob was involved?
No, of course not.
Sue looked horrified.
Besides, he'd been with me when Amy went missing, so I knew there was no reason for them to doubt him. I could see the police were just going through the motions.
How did Tom react when Amy was found? Alex asked.
Why do you keep asking about Tom?
Alex looked at Jacob. How far could she go?
Mum, why did you and Tom go to visit Amy after my wedding?
Sue's eyes widened, and as she opened her mouth, the front door lock rattled, and footsteps hit the hall. Sue closed her mouth and looked up at her husband in the doorway.
Alex, this is my father, Graham, Jacob said, warily.
Alex's stomach lurched.
Graham.
Pleased to meet you, Alex said, turning to offer her hand. As she looked up, she was surprised to see a tall, handsome man standing in front of her. He looked a good 10 years younger than Sue, although that did not add up. His eyes sparkled, but his lips barely smiled.
Likewise, Graham said, keeping his gaze on Alex until she had to look away. I could have collected you, Jacob, he said, as he walked over to the counter and splashed whiskey over a neat pile of ice.
He wore tennis whites, and his green eyes were framed by weather-tanned skin. The whole room seemed to hold its breath for him.
Dad, Alex brought me home,
Jacob started, looking at his mother for reassurance.
Alex is here to grill me, I'm afraid,
Sue interrupted.
She's a journalist, Graham. She's writing about Amy Stevenson and seems to think I can help.
A journalist?
Graham said, his voice measured and in control.
Well, that's disappointing.
He took a long look at Alex and a deep sip of amber liquid. Alex felt her own thirst tighten in her throat. She realized Jacob wasn't going to say anything more and started to explain.
I'm not trying to make anyone uncomfortable, but I'd like people to understand what happened to Amy and what she's going through.
Well,
said Graham, with the soft and steady patter of a diplomat.
She's not going through anything now, mercifully.
He poured himself another drink, steadily and without comment from his family. Alex suspected this was how most afternoons unfolded in this kitchen.
What happened was unfortunate,
Graham continued, his eyes briefly expressing compassion.
But that was many years ago, and she's been gone for a long time now.
Jacob's phone rang on the table, and he picked it up quickly.
I'm sorry, it's my boss. I have to take this.
Alex watched him walk lopsidedly out of the kitchen. Lowering her voice, Alex said,
Amy hasn't gone anywhere. Far from it. She's communicating. I've seen it myself. She may be able to tell us what happened soon.
Okay, soothed Graham. Jacob has a call now, and I think it's time you left. My wife has helped you more than enough, I'm sure.
Why did you take Tom to visit Amy, Mrs. Arlington?
Okay, let's go,
Graham interjected, placing a hand gently on the small of Alex's back
and applying just a little pressure.
Fine,
Alex exhaled, tired from hitting a brick wall. Could I just use the bathroom before I go?
I really think you should just...
Graham started.
Yes, if you must, sighed Sue. Last door down the hall.
Sue watched in silence as Alex made her way out of the kitchen. When Alex emerged from the little room, she could see Sue's back to her in the kitchen, and through the window Graham sitting rigid on a bench in the back garden, looking into the trees and sipping from his tumbler. Alex darted into the lounge, as quietly as she could. She could hear Jacob upstairs, and, as she crept closer to the archway into the kitchen, she could hear Sue speaking quickly and quietly into the phone. Alex held her breath to listen.
Tom, it's Mum. There's something I need to tell you, and it's not good. Call me back when you get this message. It's urgent, darling.
Alex's heart jumped in her chest.
Tom. It had to be Tom, using his father's name as what? A hastily chosen cover name? Paul must have been bullshitting about the older guy.
Alex kept her eyes trained on Sue. She could hear Jacob making his way slowly down the stairs. As quickly as possible, she used her phone's camera to snap as many of the family photos on the mantelpiece as she could. School photos, holiday pictures, those awful posed studio snaps of reluctant children in ties and waistcoats. She snapped without looking, thumbing the camera button on her screen as many times as possible. She'd tidy them up later.
What are you doing?
Alex swung round to see Jacob in the kitchen doorway as she stuffed her phone back into her pocket.
Just going to get my bag, she said, feeling the tips of her ears burning.
Jacob went ahead and swooped her bag from under the kitchen table, thrusting it at her, cheeks and ears blushing.
I'd better show you out, he said, apologetically.
Chapter 61 Jacob 15th of October, 2010 Jacob walked Alex to the front door and with a low voice said, I'm sorry. I guess that was a bad idea after all. I'm sorry too. I didn't want to upset your mum, Alex said, although her eyes were dancing with something. Maybe adrenaline. Jacob stepped outside with her, leaving the door on the latch. I'll try talking to her again when Dad's not here. Could you meet tomorrow? There are a few things I'd still really like to talk through. They arranged to meet the next morning at the hospital cafe. Alex left without turning back, and Jacob's shoulders sagged as he sloped back into his parents' hallway.
We're having casserole for supper. I hope that's okay.
Sue clattered the oven door open with her lemon-coloured oven mitts and bent down to extract the pot. Mum, I'm sorry. Jacob hovered awkwardly in the doorway.
Could you get the pickled red cabbage out, please? It's in the narrow cupboard with the pull-out bit.
I know I shouldn't have put you on the spot like that. Sue closed the oven door gently with her slippered foot and placed the casserole on the hob.
Oh, Jacob!
She exclaimed, putting her right hand on her forehead.
I didn't put the broccoli on to boil.
It's fine without, Mum. Don't worry.
Don't be ridiculous.
Sue snapped, reopening the oven door and pushing the pot back into its empty belly. She filled an orange Le Creuset saucepan with water, which gushed a little too energetically from the tap and splashed her pale blue jumper.
Oh, for...
she exclaimed, and stood for a moment as if she was surveying a scene of utter chaos. Jacob stood back nervously as Sue took a deep breath and closed her eyes for just a moment.
Jacob, can you please put this broccoli on to boil, and can you please get the pickled red cabbage out? I need to change my top.
Sure, Jacob said, and watched his mother walk briskly from the room, stealing a glance at the teapot as she went. Jacob excused himself after a silent dinner and went up to his small bedroom. There was nothing to do, but he couldn't stand to be around his mother, who seemed to be as hurt as she was anxious. His father, as ever, remained icily reserved. The sounds of the kitchen bubbled up as they always had. "I'm concerned about what happened today, Sue," said his father's low, steady voice.
"He shouldn't have brought her here, but you know he doesn't mean any harm, Graham."
"I just don't really understand why you would take it upon yourself to go and visit that girl." Sue was either silent or speaking too quietly for the sound to rise. "Why would you deliberately insert yourself and Tom into this situation years after everyone has moved on?"
"You know Tom. He worries about everyone.
And why are you indulging him?"
"Tom and I were just showing a little human kindness, that's all. Is that a crime?"
Jacob could precisely picture the expression that would have spread across Graham's face, one of restrained contempt. "That's not a crime, no. But a crime was committed once, and have you forgotten the police coming to call?"
"Oh, now you're being ridiculous, Graham," sighed Sue. "You wouldn't understand, you never have. You don't know anything about those boys."
"Oh, that old chestnut. I'm not in the mood for this. I'm going to find something on the box."
"Of course you are."
Jacob heard his father flick on the TV in the other room, the flipping channels creating a montage of nonsense that seeped up through the floorboards. He heard his mother's phone ring and the telltale scrape of the patio door, his mum slipping out to smoke one of the silk cuts he had always known were in the teapot.
Chapter 62. Amy. Sometime in 2010. Alex came to see me yesterday, and it was nice again this time. She brought music with her, and I was like, God, I can't believe no one's done this before. It was like coming home. Buddy Holly by Weezer, tons of Pulp and Blur, Iggy Pop, Stone Roses, Smashing Pumpkins, R.E.M., Portishead, all my faves. Plus a couple of bands I'm not too keen on, like Stiltskin, who did the Jeans advert song, and Nine Inch Nails. Although I do like Hurt, because who doesn't? But even hearing songs I'm not bothered about was blissful. To just feel drums in my chest and guitars down my back, and to know every single word like a friend, it was the kindest thing anyone has done for me in a long time. I wonder if my mum sent Alex. I wonder if Alex can tell me where mum is. I wish I could ask, but the words just get stuck in my throat. After Alex left, I could still hear the music. I felt this weird and welcome mix of calm and excitement, and I felt a bit more like myself, and a bit more ready to find the rest of myself, if that doesn't sound too pretentious. It's hard to describe how I feel at the moment. I guess it's like being stuck really far down a well. Being able to see a bit of sunlight out of the top, but being too far from it to be heard. I feel warm, cocooned but separated. Maybe this is what it feels like to be a baby in the womb. Not that anyone could remember to confirm that or not. I had felt safe too, but something has dented that recently and I can't put my finger on what it is. So maybe I'm just getting a bit further up the well and closer to sunlight. I don't know if that's wishful thinking or not. Hearing my music earlier helped me pull up. But one particular song keeps coming back to me over and over again, and it's adding to this unsettled feeling. Do You Remember the First Time by Pulp? I love that song, you know? It gets me every time. It's so persuasive and witty and cheeky. But I don't know if it's because of this bloody dream I keep having, literally, about my first time, or because of this general anxiety. But the more I try to shake the earworm, the more uncomfortable I feel. I have that dark alley feeling, like when you know something's behind you, or it's a quiet bit of a horror film and you can tell something bad's about to happen. But obviously, nothing has happened and nothing's going to happen. I just can't get rid of it. I know that they'll be around to give me my medicine soon, and then sleep will put a line through it. I just hope bad dreams aren't waiting on the other side of that line.
Chapter 63. Alex. 16th of October 2010. She'd been awake for hours, but Alex was still yawning as she approached the cafe doors. It was harder than ever to sleep these days, and the few drops of wine in her system did more to agitate than relax her. Last night, thoughts of Tom and his dad's name, and Jenny, and, as ever, Amy, circled around like the ghosts and witches of Macbeth. The family photos she'd hastily snatched had flickered through her eventual dreams like a flipbook, the pages chattering like teeth. She'd fallen asleep late, but woken long before the sun. As Alex pushed the door to the cafe open, she spotted a new bruise on her forearm and self-consciously tugged at her sleeve. Bruises were no longer a product of one-off drunken mishaps. Now they were a creeping reminder of the deeper damage done to her system. The busy widows that made up the Friends of the Hospital ran a tight ship. Cafe doors opened at 7 a.m. sharp and were shut tight at 3 p.m. From Monday to Saturday, a series of eager older ladies in deck shoes and tabards provided hot drinks in uniform china cups. They carved thick slices of sponge cake and stuffed sandwiches with a range of timeless fillings: egg and cress, cheese and pickle, ham and wet tomato. Jacob was already seated when she arrived, two mugs of tea on the table. "Thanks, I need this." Alex laid her iPhone out in front of her and held her pen over her notepad. The name Graham was dancing on her tongue, but she had to bide her time, pump everything out of Jacob before silencing him with this latest information. "So, I'd like to hear more about what Jenny said. Don't worry about repeating yourself, just start from the beginning. Even if you don't think it's important, just talk and I'll make notes." Jacob nodded wearily. "Okay." And then suddenly looked up. "Fiona!" Alex span around to see a heavily pregnant woman staring at her, nostrils flaring and chest rising and falling fast. She wore shapeless maternity pajama bottoms, a woolen cardigan, and a thin white vest that made her look like a dusty light bulb. But while she looked tired and her lips were pursed, her eyes were pretty and her cheekbones were flushed. Her auburn hair was glossy and pulled back into a ponytail, and her index finger was pointing straight at Alex. "Is this her?" Fiona said to Jacob. "I'm sorry?" Alex asked. "Is the baby okay?" Jacob stood up sharply and hobbled towards Fiona, who was leaning on the back of a chair. "What are you doing here? Is everything okay?" She ignored Jacob's questions, continuing to stare at Alex. "Is this her? Is this your other woman?" "I don't understand," Alex said as she looked to Jacob to explain. "Alex, this is my wife, Fiona." Jacob looked down at his hands. "Hi," Alex said uneasily, as Jacob turned back to his wife, who finally looked him directly in the eye, angrily wiping tears away. "Fiona, I know this looks bad, and I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." Fiona's eyes blazed, but she said nothing. "I'm a journalist," Alex said carefully, "and your husband's been helping me with a story." At this, Fiona leaned on a chair for support and half smiled. "A journalist. Right," she said eventually. Jacob stepped towards his wife as slowly as a bomb disposal expert. "Fee," he said, reaching out for her hands, which she snatched out of the way. "Fee, I'm so sorry. I have lied to you and then I've denied it and made things worse. But I promise I've never cheated on you. I never would." "Bullshit. Please, Fiona, sit down." Fiona sat on the hard chair with a hump and winced. "I think I should leave you two to talk," Alex attempted, and Fiona shot her a look. "You're not squirming out of this." Fiona put one hand on the small of her back for support. "Don't look at me like that, Jacob,"
I'm not going to drop any second. Now, start at the beginning.
It's a very, very long story, Jacob said gently.
You'd best get going then, because this baby is going to be born at some point soon, and I need to know what the fuck its father has been up to.
Jacob cast an eye at Fiona's bump and took a deep breath. When I was at school, I was going out with a girl called Amy Stevenson. He paused for a moment, but Fiona didn't react. We were both 15, and I was very fond of her. We'd been going out for quite a while when Amy was abducted after school one day. She was attacked and left in a coma. Alex is a reporter. She's been investigating what happened to Amy.
None of this makes any sense. If this was true, why wouldn't you have just told me? Why wouldn't I have known all along?
I don't know, Jacob answered, reaching out to touch her leg, pulling his hand back as she slithered away from him. I should have told you right at the start, but the longer it went on and the more time passed, I don't know. It sounds stupid now.
You never know, Jacob. You never have a proper answer for anything. This fucking... I don't even know what. This fucking fairy tale that you've concocted, or she has.
She glared at Alex.
It just doesn't add up. Just please, Jacob, please, tell me the truth.
Jacob, Alex said quietly, why don't we show her the truth? Amy, Jacob grimaced. Why not? Jacob paused. Fiona, he said, shaking his head in disbelief. I don't know if this is a good idea or not, but if you come up to the ward, you can see Amy for yourself. Fiona's eyes widened.
You're both fucking mental.
Fiona stood up with a groan.
I'm going. I don't have time for this crap.
Jacob scrambled to his feet.
I'm sorry, Fee. I'm really sorry. I just need to go now.
Let me walk you out at least.
No,
Fiona snapped.
Just...
She took a deep breath.
Just let me go, Jacob.
Alex and Jacob watched as Fiona pushed her way angrily out of the cafe, the door swinging back towards them. Chapter 64. Sue. Sometime in 2008. Closing the patio door softly behind her, Sue stepped onto the deck quietly, the fur on her slippers rustling in the summer breeze. Disgusting habit, she told herself, just as she did every time, closing her eyes to enjoy the minuscule fizz of the tobacco catching light. She dragged the warm, sweet smoke through the stem of the cigarette, between her lips and deep into her chest. She hoped all of her boys had avoided this filthy habit in adulthood. She'd gone to great pains to hide her own smoking from them throughout their lives. Thomas was the only one she'd ever caught, although she had no doubt that Simon had had his moments too. He was just more cunning. She really wasn't sure about Jacob. He was a stickler for following the rules. Thomas had been 15 when she'd caught him. Always such a good boy. Such an easy, happy child. Until St. Cuthbert's, anyway. From the moment he started at that school, he'd become enveloped in a black cloud. Everything seemed to pain or offend him. Suddenly he was wringing his hands over every perceived injustice, feeling guilty about the family's nice things and declaring himself vegetarian until Sue had put a stop to that. He was wasting away. He would wear T-shirts with naive political statements on and spend hours in his room listening to bands with names like the Manic Street Preachers. And then one day she'd had enough of the miserable music pouring over the top of Coronation Street and had gone upstairs and knocked sharply on Thomas's door. When no reply came, Sue had gone in. At first, she thought the room was empty, with the music left on, which was bad enough. Then she'd seen the curtains flapping,
the window wide open. As she'd gone closer, the shape of her youngest son had come into view. He was outside the window, sitting in a heap on the roof of the bay below. She'd cried out in surprise, startling him so he span around, a rolled-up cigarette dangling forlornly from his lips. He'd stubbed it out on a roof tile and scrambled back through the window, standing in front of her with his head down and his hair flopping over his eyes.
"You should ground me, Mum," he said.
"But you don't go anywhere, Thomas. What good would that do?"
"It's what I deserve, I suppose,"
he'd said, and sat heavily on his single bed. She'd left the room without another word. She'd not caught him again after that, but she'd not exactly tried. She blamed that blasted school, but she couldn't uproot him another time. She regretted that decision in hindsight. The 3 years he spent at St. Cuthbert's hollowed out her happy-go-lucky boy, replacing him with an anxious, guilt-ridden ghost. He'd become preoccupied with darkness, driven by an obsessive need to seek out the grubby and try to clean it. It set him on a path that had taken him further and further away from her. Given how much he hated that school, it wasn't a surprise when Thomas chose to leave and take his A-levels at college instead. But it was a surprise, actually a terrible shock, that he was adamant that he wanted to go to college in a deprived area of London. For God's sake, some wretched need to expose himself to those less fortunate and less moral and trustworthy. After a few months of 2-hour round trips on the train, he'd lugged his belongings all the way to a bedsit in a grotty corner of New Cross, refusing his parents' help. He'd spent his evenings stacking shelves to pay his way. Was it a surprise that he'd continued creeping away? After university in the Midlands, he'd got his first social work job in one of those old industrial towns that had dominated the news once upon a time and was now full of single mothers, undesirables, and feral kids with no moral compass. Ever since St. Cuthbert's, Tom had embarked on a series of thankless tasks, and now he wanted to come clean, to undergo the ultimate in thankless endeavours, just as Jacob was finally moving on and getting married. Sue had stood aside for a long time, allowed him to make his own mistakes, to fall on his own swords, but this latest plan, well, it wasn't just his head on the block. It wasn't just his guilt. If Tom spoke up, the family would be permanently fractured, and Sue wasn't about to let that happen. Whatever it took, she'd sooner die.
Chapter 65. Alex. 21st of October, 2010.
"So, does your editor like what you've done so far?" Matt tested.
"I've not shown him yet. I promised you, remember?"
The brute force of a baby crying in the background came down the line.
"I can't really talk for long, Alex. I'm looking after Ava while Jane's sleeping."
For a moment, Alex said nothing. Too long a moment. She swallowed and pushed away the image of Matt gazing into the tiny face of a newborn. A newborn whose features she would recognize. She wished it was possible to have her evening nightcap now, without that throwing everything out of whack. Instead, she sat on her free hand as if it was likely to run into the kitchen of its own accord and pop open a bottle.
"Sorry, I'll try to be quick. It's just that I'm getting a serious sinking feeling about Jacob's brother, Tom. He just seems to be in the shadows everywhere I look. Metaphorically, I mean. He knew Amy, obviously, and he's a kind of loner, works with vulnerable kids."
"Okay, I mean, it's not against the law to be a loner. We'd have our work cut out if it was. Does he have an alibi?"
"I don't know. I know Jacob and his mum were out, and his dad worked long hours in London, so I'm guessing he was on his own for a few hours."
"Well, you can't guess that. He might have been at a friend's house or playing football or something."
"Yeah, I know that," she snapped, before she could stop herself.
"Okay, I'm running out of time here. What do you need?"
"Sorry. Look, I found something else out. It could be a coincidence,
but the Edenbridge pervert shares a name with Tom and Jacob's dad, Graham.
If Tom is involved, that would be one hell of a fuck-up. It seems way too obvious.
He was only 13, though. He would have been a novice, or maybe he was just an apprentice. Maybe his dad is involved somehow.
Look, the description of Graham said he was mid-teens to mid-30s. Would a 13-year-old even be classed as mid-teens to most people? And as for his dad being involved, that seems like quite a leap.
Jacob's a big guy, really tall. I guess his brother probably is too. How drunk was the bus girl? What did you say her name was?
Nice try.
All right, but you said she was really drunk. How reliable is her attempt to put an age on him?
If you start going down that route, how reliable is any of what she said?
But maybe that's it. We don't know what's right and what was the drink obscuring things. If I could just talk to her.
Absolutely not.
What if I could show her a picture of Tom? Find out once and for all.
Alex, I can't give you her details. Besides the fact that those details are well out of date. She lived in a halfway house for Bernardo's kids, so she won't still be there.
A halfway house? You mean she was from a kid's home?
Shit, I shouldn't have told you that. I'm so exhausted I don't know what I'm saying. Don't take advantage.
I'm not trying to take advantage of you. Jesus.
I'm sorry, Alex. I can't give you her details. I just can't.
It happens all the time, Matt. Police sources are the backbone of newspapers. It's when money changes hands that it's a problem. You'd just be giving me a name, that's all. Please think about it.
I don't need to think about it. My baby is 3 days old. I can't take risks with my job. The stakes are too high.
Look at your baby daughter, Matt. Amy was Joe and Bob's little daughter. This girl was someone's baby.
Don't you dare.
Matt, please, just a name. I'm from around here, aren't I? I could say I heard what happened from a friend of a friend. She would have told people at the time. I could say I had a friend at the children's home.
Jesus, Alex, I don't know about any of it. I need to go. I can't think straight.
Alex sat on her knees on the sofa, her chest resting against the back, staring out of the window like a dog in the boot of a car. Her days stretched 3 times as long now that the first drink on her self-imposed timetable was right before bed. Not that it was helping her sleep when she did finally get to that point. It seemed too much to try to make notes when there was nothing new to say. As she started the afternoon's internal monologue, just one won't hurt. No, no, no. Her phone vibrated off the sofa cushion. She flipped it around to see a text message from Matt. Caroline Mortimer, delete this, please. Alex leaped up from the sofa and span around, not quite sure what to do. Should she even reply? Would she wake the baby? The phone would still be in his hand. Thanks, kiss. She pretended to herself that the kiss was a mistake and waited for a reply that never came. She scurried over to her Mac to visit 192.com and search for Caroline Mortimer in Tunbridge Wells. There it was. Electoral Roll, 1997. So Caroline hung around long enough to register, but left before the next election. Or died, or went to prison, or left the country, or just didn't bother. Alex tried not to think about dead ends. Eventually, after paying to access the complete records across every site she could think of, Alex reached the end of the digital breadcrumb trail. Caroline Mortimer registered to vote in 2010 in Malmesbury Mews, Greenwich. Found you, Caroline.
Chapter 66. Amy. Sometime in 2010. I'm asleep more than I'm awake these days, like a cat dozing. One eye lazily opening to consider the world, then slipping back under, unimpressed. But I don't particularly want to sleep. I just find myself waking up before I even realize I'm falling. I'm getting rapid-fire dreams, flooding in one after the other. I swear I was dreamless for a good long while, and now there's nothing I can do to stop them. It's like a Clockwork Orange, where they pin his eyelids back and he has to watch film after film after film. There are recurring dreams too. One in particular I'm having more often than not right now. I had it again yesterday after Alex left. It's the one where I'm finally losing my virginity. It was so painful this most recent time that it still hurt between my legs when I woke up. When I first started having this dream, there was a nice bit at the start and it built up from there. I wanted it to happen. I was relieved it was finally happening. But there was nothing nice in the run-up this time. We just hurtled straight in. It's more of a recurring nightmare now. Each time I have it, he hurts me more. I don't see his face, and when he finishes, he turns his back. His shoulders shake as he laughs dismissively and tells me to clean myself up, even though he's left no trace. I hear him peeling the rubber away and dropping it into a carrier bag, and then I see him reach for a pack of baby wipes and I can make out that he's cleaning himself. And then suddenly, I want to go so much that my chest starts to pound. I sit up and straighten my clothes and try to leave, but he won't let me go. It's like that unique dream thing where you can't move, you're heavy like lead, and you've forgotten how to walk or run, except he is the one controlling my movements. He won't let me out, and he won't say why. And even though nothing more happens, I know it's really bad. I know the dream has a bad ending, and I don't think I've seen the worst of it yet. I'm scared to go to sleep. I'm scared to see his face. I think I know who it is, but I don't want it to be him. I don't want him to have done that to me. Not like that. Even when it's just in my head. I hope it's just in my head.
Chapter 67. Jacob. 21st of October, 2010. Finally, Fiona knew about Amy. The cat was out of the bag. He'd said it all. Everything he should have drip-fed through their years together had tumbled out like a huge boulder and knocked everything down. She was no less fed up with him. His wife just had the specifics of the lies he'd told, rather than his denials. It didn't feel like progress. It felt like a spotlight had been shone on what a massive balls-up he'd made. Fiona hadn't answered his calls, hadn't replied to any of his text messages. For all he knew, she could have had their baby and been making arrangements to move back to Lancashire without him. Or somewhere else. Somewhere he'd never be able to find them. Even in 2010, it was possible to disappear. Jacob had spent the whole day at work with his phone in his hand, willing something to change. But when Fiona's number flashed up, it still took him by surprise.
"Hello?"
Jacob answered, making no effort to hide his panic.
"Are you okay? What's happening?"
"Jay,"
she panted.
"Come out into the car park. I needed to speak to you,"
Fiona started to say, and was immediately folded over by a contraction.
"How close are they?"
Jacob asked, rubbing Fiona's back gingerly as she leaned forward against her car.
"I don't know,"
Fiona said, unfolding and breathing deeply.
"I was trying to drive. I couldn't time them."
Jacob set the stopwatch on his phone.
"I needed to talk to you about Amy, Jay. I didn't know what to think. I don't know what to think."
She breathed deeply.
"Look, I Googled Amy,"
Fiona said as she caught her breath.
"So I know some of what you said was true, but then I got here and my waters broke."
She breathed for a moment and wiped her eyes again.
"And then..."
Fiona hunkered back down, both hands on her belly. It had felt so alien to hear Amy's name coming from Fiona's mouth, but there were more important matters in hand. Jacob was so relieved to be involved that thoughts of Amy flew away in an instant.
"That was 2 minutes," he said urgently. "We need to go to the hospital. Right now."
"Oh, God, we're going to have a baby,"
panted Fiona.
"We're going to have a baby,"
echoed Jacob, allowing himself a brief smile.
Chapter 68. Alex. 22nd of October, 2010. Alex jumped in a taxi at North Greenwich Station. She roughly knew where Malmesbury Mews sat along the thick, grey snake of Blackwall Lane.